This is Advanced Ability Center tape number 7. The title of this lecture is On the Subject of Ethics.
One, 2, 3, 4. Hi, everybody. Hi, everybody. Thanks a lot. I've been asked, in that it's a very warm day today and there's a lot of people, if you could somewhat curtail the smoking, especially large cigars and things like that. Again, thanks for being here. The today's format, there's a little tape thing we're going to play. And then David's going to just start right in with a talk that is somewhat important. As far as this little tape goes, there have been... Oh, I should say, by the way, that I've been totally remiss in the usual announcement of graduates of courses, and I forgot to bring the list, and we'll do that next week. There have been some really wonderful recent graduations of ClearTest, which is real exciting, and we'll announce all that next week. People ask, you know, what's the new news, what's the hot skinny, and what is the church doing to you, and what's happened, and you know, normally our response is just simply to discuss getting on with the game and not too much attention to it, because the fact is that there are statistically ongoing missions sent here, and they do what they do. One of our very favorites, who others refer to as Miss Piggy, came and did what she did, and then she left, and it was quiet for a few days, and others arrived. And the others do what they do, and they make their phone calls, and we more or less carry on. As it happens, the most recent missionary person, whose name is Jane, had been calling people, and a nice man whose name is George, who's on our lines here, happened to record some of the phone call. In that, in so many ways, it expresses so much of everything that is going on in both sides of the so-called fence. I thought we would just play a few lovely moments from this tape, which was made a couple days ago. So here's, this is George and Jane.
Well, then I guess I have not been getting standard tests of the organ, so my essence is going down since I had orotidine and not up. I've had nonsorotidine at Peel, and I've had over 75 hours of nonsorotidine, and my case level actually went lower. So what you're saying then is I was not getting standard tech. I got audited when I shouldn't. I had an operation. I could not get any help. Nobody would even want to give me a touch assist. If I didn't have a penny, they wouldn't even talk to me. So I totally deteriorated since I've had my auditing at Mayo. And since I've gone to Davis, I've been flying. I'm physically and mentally, I've been feeling so much better.
That was some wonderful moments with Jane and George. That's. This week's talk from David discusses the creation of our new 20-man ethics and justice division in our. No, seriously, let's welcome David.
One of the things we're often asked about, and I'm sure many of you have heard about, is the question of whether we apply ethics tech or whether we have an ethics officer or, as Harvey said, a 20-man ethics team there at the center or not. And so I thought it was time that we clarified what our position is with regard to the subject of ethics and justice. So, first of all, one of the things I recall very clearly on it, and I think is important, is that in late 1978 and early 79, LRH was doing some research and some piloting of various pieces of ethics tech. And one of the things that I remember he used to say very frequently at the time was that ethics is something that you have to get the individual to do. It's not something that someone can do on the individual or make the individual do. And I remember there was a particular section that was being written for one of the chapters of a book at the time, and the person that was working on this particular article had written in various ways various statements about putting somebody else's ethics in or getting ethics in on someone. And he kept pointing out and changing the text and wrote some cramming orders to the effect that the person hadn't understood that ethics is something that the individual does. And there were other statements that he made at the time to the effect that unless ethics is a self-determined decision and a self-determined action, it becomes another determined thing. And basically, one of the definitions of ethics, he said basically that ethics is the contemplation of optimum survival. Or in other words, it's contemplation and acting along the lines of optimum survival for self and for others. So the idea of making a person other determined in how he acts or what his conduct should be violates the basic principle that I just mentioned and the basic principle of a person being ethical. Basically, being ethical then would mean that a person takes into account not only himself but the other dynamics or the other people involved and comes to a conclusion based on the optimum solution, which is, of course, the greatest good for the greatest number and, in some respects, the least harm for the majority. Anyway, it's also something that's not just in recent times that we've seen a lot of, but, of course, up and down the track there have been various movements and religions and crusades, wars and so on and so forth on the subject of different opinions about what was moral or what was right or what was ethical, or maybe simply various wars over what was best for one side. But in every in every movement that's existed where there's been any question about morality or ethics, it's usually started on the basis that they would like people to behave in a certain way because it would be more desirable. And some type of goal is set. And that sounds very positive, and it probably is at the beginning. Then, as there are various failures or departures from that, force starts entering in, and there's an attempt to control a person through force, to control his behavior or his conduct, maybe just his manners, but certainly later his morals and his ethics. And to some degree, force appears to work. Even in school, you know, a teacher slapping somebody with a stick or a ruler or whatever has a cautionary effect to begin with anyway. But the trouble with using force is that next week or next month you have to use a little more force and a little more and so on and so on. Plus the idea of enforcing a moral code or an ethical code on somebody basically betrays the fact that the enforcer doesn't really believe that man is basically good. If one believes and actually knows that man is basically good, then the idea is simply to use ARC and you can resolve any situation that way. This doesn't mean that I want to clarify that I don't mean by any of this that people shouldn't be restrained from committing harmful acts. I certainly think restraint is necessary, especially on the subject of good behavior and upholding good order and discipline, and especially with regard to the law. And without belaboring the point on it, of course, a few years ago, the whole subject of Scientology would have been a lot better off had the law not been broken. I think that's quite a lesson. So I don't want any of this to be misconstrued into the idea of I think people should be restrained from breaking the law or violent or harmful behavior. But the idea of good behavior or bringing about good behavior or ethical conduct on the part of people, I think is something that should be left up to the individual to do and to do for himself, not something that someone else tries to force on him. Possibly, back on the track, it's quite possible that some of the implants that occurred and those involved in them may have started off with the idea of trying to make people good or make them behave better than they were and descended into more forceful efforts. And that could, of course, have led to implanting. It's a natural sequence if one starts using more and more force to enforce a pattern of behavior on somebody. Anyway, this point came up recently because one person actually wrote somebody up and sent a copy of the report to us, which was the first time. It was quite unique. It was the first time that somebody had done that, although this action of writing people up it's something that came about in the last couple of years or so. Prior to that and earlier on, I think probably everybody here has been around long enough that they would recall that earlier than that, people used to, if anything, write themselves up. In other words, they'd write up what they'd done and what their responsibilities were. In more recent times, I've not heard very much of that at all, but I've heard an awful lot of people writing other people up, which is not a high degree of responsibility. It's basically an accusation towards another person of what they did wrong. Anyway, somebody sent in a report where he'd written somebody up, and I saw this, and some of the other staff saw it, and we were talking about it, and decided it was time that we took a stand on the subject one way or the other. And basically, as far as we're concerned at the AAC, we don't want to, and we don't intend to get into telling people how they should live their lives or interfering with their lives or conduct in any way. And it's basically because we feel that to do so not only would be an unwanted thing, it's something that people wouldn't want generally, and it's also something that we would find undesirable to do. But because, and also because it's actually an unworkable course of action. What does work is raising a person's self-determinism. And while we were talking about this, I suddenly remembered something that happened a long time ago. I heard of several examples of this way back when I first got into Scientology. Around in 1959, 1960, I was working in an org, and I think this is a great example of something that I've would like to have seen happening more often over the years, and which used to happen in the old days, so I'll tell you about it. There was a PC that came into the org to get some auditing, and he wasn't a Scientologist. He'd heard about it and heard that he could improve himself and his life, and came in and got 25 hours of auditing. And at the time, he was run on, the 25 hours of auditing was on CCHs 1 to 4, so he had 25 hours of CCHs 1 through 4, and at the end of the 25 hours, he was asked if he intended to go on and get some more auditing. And he said that he would, but he couldn't do that right now because he had to get a job and earn some money, and there was a conversation about that. And I think the person, the staff member talking to him, said something about, oh, did you lose your job or something? And he said, well, yeah, kind of. I kind of lost my job. Anyway, then he went on to explain that it wasn't so much that he'd lost his job as he decided that he'd have to get a job. And it seemed a little mysterious. But anyway, he explained that he had made his living as a burglar. Or as he called it, he was a professional B&E man, breaking and entering. Anyway, that's how he'd made his income for many years. He was a professional burglar. And nobody had talked to him. This was way back prior to anyone having any attention on the subject of ethics or anything in the late 50s, early 60s. Nobody on staff had talked to him about it. In fact, nobody on staff had even known that he was a burglar. But anyway, at the end of his 25 hours, he had come to the conclusion on his own that it would be desirable for him to knock off doing that, to get himself trained up and be able to do a constructive job. And he just basically cognited that that's what he wanted to do. So anyway, he explained that what he was going to do was he'd found out about some night school where he could go to and learn carpentry, and then he was going to get a job with a contractor as a carpenter and do some building. And he said that in about 3 or 4 months' time, he should have finished his training and have a job and be earning some money, and he'd come back. And sure enough, he did. And he went on to be a carpenter from then on, got more auditing and so on. And the reason I'm telling this is it's an example of something that was stated a lot by LRH, and which was observable a lot in the early days, which was that people, as they get audited and as they come up the tone scale, do naturally become more ethical. It's a thing that actually happens. And it is because man's basically good, so you free him from his reactive mind and he becomes more ethical. And then, having remembered that, and I remember various similar stories, although, you know, that to me was a fairly classic example of it. And I realized that I hadn't heard very much of that sort of thing happening over the years since then, particularly in recent times. And I feel that it's probably attributable to the fact that so much attention has gone on to trying to put ethics in on people, and it's become such an enforced thing that it's probably inhibited some gains along the way on that. And so therefore, by not trying to do it on an enforced basis, we should get a resurgence going again of people becoming more ethical and more moral in their own consideration and in their own right as a natural consequence of auditing and training. And so basically that's what our stand and attitude is, at the AAC and thought we should express it. Thank you.
Church calls it